Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Papaya Podcast. I'm your hostess, trying her mostest, Sarah Nicole, and each week I'm going to be dishing out some sweetness mixed in with some seeds of wisdom or something like that. So get ready to get inspired, get candid, get real, because we are all in this digital space together. All right, Dr. Jodi Carrington, do you know that when I first met you, I did not know who you were, but everyone on Instagram freaked out when we shared that story together just at a dinner at a Mamas for Mamas event out in Kelowna. Everyone lost their gosh darn minds. They were like, I cannot believe you're meeting Dr. Jodi. And I was like, well, so far, I just think she's really cool because she has great hair and she reminds me of like a young Dolly Parton in a way. And then I heard you speak.
My boobs are almost as big as well. So,
oh, God,
same, same. I can't sing to save my fucking life, but I'll take the rest.
Well, we were getting our hair done together and I remember you saying something about like tease it up. And I was like, oh, I love her so much. And I was like, bigger, she just asked for her hair to be teased bigger. And I just was obsessed with you. And then I heard you speak and it was just so, well, first of all, was a little intimidating because I had to speak after you and you went out there and the way the room just went quiet when you spoke and the room was like, so you, we were fundraising that night and you really brought so much energy and stuff alive. And ever since then, I've been all in on the Dr. Jodi. I came on your podcast, Everyone Comes From Somewhere. And is that what it's called? Is that everyone?
Yes. And people lost it because you were bawling. And
no,
like, we
I
did this.
It's not running down my face.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. Like that, that's the plan. You know, I love this. Okay, so it's in March as when we're taping this. And, you know, I'm thinking a lot about, I do a Women in Wealth Gala next week on International Women's Day. And I keep thinking about how difficult it is, and you lead the way in this so beautifully, to honestly be vulnerable with women, with other women. And so we talk a lot about, you know, feminism and the idea of, you know, creating the next generation for our daughters and our sons to understand, because at this rate, gender parity will not be recognized or realized for another 300 years. And so I find it so fascinating that some of the biggest proponents to the forward movement of women are women themselves. Oh. Our expectations of each other, for each other, with each other. Yes. And not to be able to just be like, okay, listen, bitches, like, this is hard. I don't have a fucking clue what I'm doing. The team snap moms are going nuts. I feel incompetent in every realm. And fuck. You know, like, this is what I love about you, Sarah. And I think, like, it was I think I told you this on when you came on my podcast, is like, you're one of the smartest women I have ever met. And to be able to sit in your presence and understand that you can talk about the world vulnerably and still be very clear about what you will not compromise and the direction of your business and your family. And I think it's, you're allowed to do both and in this space of being, I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, but I'm also very clear on these are the things I will not compromise.
Yeah. You know, it's so fascinating as I reflect on vulnerability, and exactly what you just said is I've always been an open book. I'm the kind of person that, like, I think I grew up with a lot of like weird parts of shame. And then when I just started talking about all the stuff, then you're just like, oh, it's the floodgates. But then it was weird when people would like use it against you. Like that's the weird part about being vulnerable, is like understanding that not everybody is rooting for you. So sometimes if you were like, I really feel like I don't know what I'm doing with this newborn, then they'll be like, this woman does not know what she's doing with this newborn. She is out here being a mother, talking about not knowing what to do with her newborn. Like she should not have that child. And that's not a real scenario, but just creating one in which you can be vulnerable, but people will still like use it as a weapon. And so it's a really delicate thing. Like I think for the longest time, I'm like, vulnerability is awesome. You can just say things and you can share things and you get to find out that other people felt this way too. And you're not alone anymore. And how amazing is that? And as time goes on, I feel a little bit more sheltered. I feel a little bit more, as to what you said, like there is this, it's weird. It's weird to be vulnerable and also be so seen, and knowing that it is a very difficult line to walk. But you do so much work in human connection and really getting to the roots of things. Before we get into all of that, first of all, introduce who the heck you are and why it is that you do what you do, because it is truly transforming women's lives.
You're amazing. All right. So I am a psychologist by training, clinical psychologist. I got a PhD in this country, in Canada, where we are. And I grew up in a little town called Viking, Alberta, Canada, and we're like white, straight, able-bodied, extremely racist. I didn't see a person of color till I was in grade 3, in this beautiful place of privilege that, of course, I had no idea I had, which is really sort of the epitome of white privilege. You have no idea you have it. And I can tell you, we had 22 kids that started kindergarten together, and the same 19 graduated together. And I had a favorite teacher. Like hockey was the biggest thing in our little town, because there's 7 boys in our town, the Sutter brothers, 6 make the NHL. And I tried to marry one, didn't work out. So I had to make it on my own, which is fine. And I often think about that, because like I had 7 shots to nail that shit down and I couldn't get it done. But anyway, I came into my stride a little later. But what happened is I can tell you the first and last name of every teacher I had. I have no idea the literacy or the numeracy that they taught me. But I remember my favorite teacher's name was Holly Nordstrom. And I remember where she was standing and what she was wearing the day she told us that the then captain of our hockey team had been killed. And I remember thinking, even as a 16-year-old kid, if the big people are okay, if there are people at the helm, when there's big emotions in this world, the rest of us will be all right. And it really paved the way for me understanding the role of women in leadership, the role of, you know, using positions of privilege and emotional regulation in this concept of parenting and creating companies, because it's the universal truth. Those of us who are in a position where we've had people who could show us how to do it, we'll have so much more capacity to be effective in this world. And it is such a privilege, because you can't give away something you've never received. So when I left that little town, I knew I wanted to be a psychologist. I spent a fair bit of time as a civilian member for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and I did a lot of understanding around organizational stress and trauma. And then I did my residency in Nova Scotia, and they said, you have to do rotation with kids. And I said, listen, I'm not a fan. I much prefer big people. And they said, you're kind of like a kid. We think you'd be a good fit. And they weren't wrong. So I fell in love with the tiny humans. I spent an extra year in doing some child psychiatry work. And then my first job was at the Alberta Children's Hospital on a locked psychiatric inpatient unit for kids. And my favorite is the hitters, the kickers, the biters, and the ones that tell you to fuck off, because I've assessed and treated over 1,000 kids in this country, and I've never, not one time, met a bad kid. Not one time. And we make this mistake all the time. We ask this question, what is wrong with this one? We do this to other women. We do this to our partners. We do this to the children that we, you know, struggle the most in our community. We always say, what is wrong with this one? And you know what we never ask? What happened to this one? And I started to learn real quick that context is the prerequisite for empathy. And you know, to tie it back to this conversation around vulnerability, oftentimes when we can be vulnerable in our stories, that is where empathy, connection live. But it's such a fine line, as you talk about, because it's not about the reason behind vulnerability dictates how we will respond to the response. If I am being vulnerable because I want other people to confirm who I am and that I'm good and that I'm going to be okay, it will often fall short. If I'm being vulnerable in a sense, the reason is to share my story and to be, the work is really in this place of being like, here it is. And I'm doing the best I can, which means the response becomes irrelevant. Mm. So I often talk about, you know, context is the prerequisite for empathy. Empathy is the antidote to burnout. And we are so tired in this noisy world that it honestly comes back for me to understanding the stories of each other. Because people, Brené Brown said this, people are hard to hate close up.
Oh, yeah.
And we've never been this disconnected.
We've never been this disconnected. I think about this all the time, because for the longest time, I really had a hard, and I would love to ask you about this a little bit, because in the realm of, you know, the people, there's no such thing as a bad kid. Let's believe that there's no such thing as a bad human. There's just, people are going through things, they're disconnected. How do we also protect ourselves and have boundaries? I mean, I'm a bless 'em and block 'em girl these days, because I'm like, this is not only robbing me of my peace, it's robbing me of my family time. It's robbing me of my feelings of safety, of my hope, my trust in people some days. But I don't believe that people are inherently bad. I just worry for the direction we're going in. And I also sometimes hold a lot of guilt when I do the bless and block, when I put up that boundary. I kind of would love to hear from you, like, how do we, in the world of this, all of this, especially, you know, when you're opening yourself up in spaces like online, and it, when it's not about the response, but then the response is there and it impacts you, how would you say is a good way to navigate that, or at least protect ourselves when somebody is maybe going through something? So I know if you've been listening for a while, you heard me last year talk about me discovering prunes and my love for them, particularly California prunes. When you're shopping for these prunes, you're going to be looking for ones that are labeled Product of USA or Product of California on the packaging. That's going to get you premium quality prunes. Well, why am I eating prunes at all? Well, California prunes, they're truly an under-the-radar superfood. Listen to this. They are richly packed with antioxidants, vitamins, minerals, supporting bone, heart, and gut health, and boosting your overall immunity. And honestly, shock to us all, they taste great. And they work so well in so many different recipes. In fact, if you want to learn more about how to find really good recipes, I personally like just eating them as is, or you can throw them in a blender, make a smoothie with them. Some people like them in savory dishes. I was actually on the californiaprunes.ca website, and they had a recipe for cinnamon rolls with prunes. Just looking for different ways to integrate them. I am somebody who loves the impact of prunes, and I think that that's a really cool way to integrate them. But yeah, a serving of prunes, 4 to 5 prunes, is packed with 3 grams of both soluble and insoluble fiber, which collectively promotes your healthy gut bacteria, which we love around here. But the prunes from California, this is why you got to get the California prunes. They are moist, they are chewy, they are sticky, delicious, and they really have this sweet, earthy taste if you haven't tried one. So if you want to try prunes and start implementing them into your life, go and find those prunes, Product of USA or Product of California on the packaging, and visit californiaprunes.ca for information, recipe, and nutritional facts. That is californiaprunes.ca. We are so grateful for them. They are sponsoring this show today. So thank you, California Prunes, for not only being delicious, but helping us create such a great show for you today. Let's get right back to it.
So 2 things. It's so much easier said than done. Truly. So I'm going to give you this answer from a place of emotional regulation, which means I'm in my clearest self. I have the best access to everything I know to be true. Okay. Because what also happens is I'll lose my fucking mind. Like I say this about my kids. I wrote a best-selling book called Kids These Days. If you watch me with my own personal kids, you wouldn't buy the book. OK, Okay. So there are days, right? And you know the answer. Here's the truth of it all is that you are good. Full stop. And I would say that to every single human. I've sat with people in prison. I've sat with people who've got their kids apprehended, you know, babies who've been suspended in juvie, like all the things. And this is the statement that is true. You are good. It is not that you need more skill in this regard. We lose access to it when we need it the most, when people debilitate us and throw us off our rockers and all of those kind of things, right? And I think if I were to summarize it in one statement and then I'll unpack it, I think be kind and don't tolerate bullshit in that order. The benefit of the doubt these days is so necessary. And when I get attacked online, when my character is questioned and it cuts me to the core, when people ask me questions about, you know, my capacity to parent, when my daughter screams in Walmart, "Kids these days is a lie. I'm telling everybody on Instagram that you," I'm like, "Oh, holy fuck. Okay. You got it, baby girl." So when those things are questioned, I think, you know, what I'm thinking a lot about, and I would love your opinion about this, is we always ask people if they're doing the work. Don't date this person if they've done the work. Don't connect to this person that she needs to do her work. Have you done your work? I think the definition of the work is being able to get back to that space of understanding and empathy as quickly as I can in those debilitating moments, which means I'm not going to condone your behavior or support it, but it is a boundary that allows me to save myself, but also take the feedback when I need it. Because I think part of the issue with bless and block is that there's always... It's not necessarily because it hurts. It doesn't mean it's necessarily wrong. It doesn't mean it's necessarily right offside, right? If I'm going to garner a living off of providing people insight into my life, into my experience, and provide opinions and speak about, write about here, please, you know, I put my thoughts in this book, do this, listen to my podcast, do these things, then I better be fucking ready for some feedback. And sometimes it comes at the most inopportune times, like when I am not prepared for your feedback. And I think it's like, be kind and don't tolerate bullshit in that order really helps me understand that, like, I can understand where you come from. It does not mean that I'm going to support it, condone it, whatever, you know? And I think it took me a long time to understand boundaries, because in this place of connection, even as a psychologist, I was like, in the beginning of my career, I need to be available. I'm going to come back to the children's hospital at midnight and put this baby to bed. I want to, like, yep, this mom can call me. Like, on the weekend, I'm doing, it's almost like a badge of honor. Like, yes. I'm fucking good. Like, I'm needed. Also.
Yeah. People want to ask me questions. I'm here to answer. I'm here. Like, you want to be there.
I feel, and there's like an obligation, a requirement, particularly in a position of privilege, that I feel like I'm so fucking lucky. My kids are so fucking, like, yes, here you go. And then I read this quote that changed my whole perspective. It says, "The most generous among us are the most boundaried." And I was like, stop. Those two things can't go in the same sentence. I don't understand how that's possible. What do you mean? I'm going to give you if I have the capacity to say, and I have a real, I think, like, visceral response to the boundary, because in my head, I see me behind a wall. I see me behind, like, plexiglass and locks and, like, on the other side just being like, "You can't get me, motherfucker, because you're bad and I'm good," right? The true definition of boundaries is not about anybody else other than me. When I look after me, baby girl, I can take all of your feedback. I can hear what I need to hear and give you back the rest. I understand as a mama, I know my children on my clearest days have got a phenomenal parent. I know that. And then on my worst days, I'm like, I am so sorry. You maybe should go lit with my mom. I mean, she kind of fucked me up too, but I feel like you're right. You go live with Baba. That's a good choice. And so I don't think it is ever, there will never be the absence of the constant questioning. Like that's not, we don't arrive at this place of we've got the boundaries. Nobody's criticism is ever going to hurt. I want it to hurt. If it doesn't stop hurting, then I'm numb.
That's such that a good point. That is not
the place I want to get to. I want to feel all my emotions, right? And here's the question we often say, you know, when I ask a parent, they'll bring me, you know, can you see my child? Can you? And I would ask any parent in the world, what's your biggest hope for your child? And so many parents will say this to me, I just want them to be happy. And here's the problem with happy. Nobody's happy all the time.
No, not we don't all
wake
the time.
Up, despite the fact that we can be very engaged in how positive we are in our bodies. I don't wake up every morning and be like, holy fuck, look at this 5'3" Ukrainian chassis. This is what I hoped she'd look like. I'm so happy. And then I look at my personal husband, Aaron, and I say, you know, he's blowing his nose like a farmer that he is and yelling. I'm like, oh, I'm so happy. I'm not happy all the time. I had a lot of choices in 2009, and I'm a fucking farmer who blows his nose like that. Like, I'm not happy. And so I think this constant sort of focus on, I want my children to be happy. I want to be happy in my marriage. I want to be happy with my body. I'm going to just be happy. I'm not. And it's okay sometimes when your words hurt me. And to be honest about that is where I find sort of, we don't have a script to navigate when we're not happy. We don't have a script as much to navigate. I mean, if we do a social media review this morning and we flip through most people's stories, there is lots of evidence that this is how you should be doing it, right?
Yes.
Drink this, do drink this, this work
that.
Out.
Don't eat that. Yeah. Avoid this.
Right. Please do this with your parent or with your children. Don't forget about your aging parents, which all of this is beautiful. I love those things. I want to know those things. And I also want a script for when I feel like I can't get out of bed. I also want a script for how the fuck am I supposed to build a company and raise three children and be responsible for keeping, you know, my marriage together and also like be grateful for the fact that I'm not in Gaza in this moment. And fuck, do I know anything about Gaza or Israel? Why am I not using my platform? What am I like all of that is okay. And that I think the place to be able to just offer that is that's where vulnerability lives, because it's like, this is how fucking hard it is some days. And then in the moments where I need to look after me become the number one most important. If we had a priority list, I would say you, your teams, whatever that looks like, if you are a part of a volunteer organization, if you're running a business, if you're doing whatever, and then the people you serve in that order. Needs to be the priority. You understand?
Yes.
Us, who we come home to at night, you, me, who we come home to, number one. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, this is a job.
Yeah.
Whatever you do exactly. Outside is a job.
You know what?
We're replaceable.
I have this conversation all the time. My husband and I had a big conversation about it. He was really stressed in another job. And we had this conversation about like how replaceable we are. Like genuinely, I know this sucks to hear. And we all like are working so hard to like leave our mark on this world. And I'm so honestly honored to even leave a small one. But the reality is if I were gone from social media, if I were gone from this earth, if I was gone from certain things, eventually people would find another person. And my husband, if he was hit by a car, they would hire somebody else. He's not replaceable in our family. We don't just get another husband and a father and a stepfather. He's gone. Like there is no replacing that person. And that's a very quick way to figure out where your priorities are. It's a very quick assessment that can really bring you back down to earth, but it can be a very difficult thing when sometimes the things that are the loudest or the most commanding or the end of day needs are so, they're in your face. They're buzzing on your phone. They're commanding your time. It can be easy to lose that boundary a little bit and shift into, oh crap, I've got to do this. Sorry, Brandon.
100%.
Yeah.
And again, that's the point. You're never going to arrive, right? Giving yourself grace in this moment. And here's the thing I'd love your opinion on. So I've been thinking about this so much. We are the first generation, well, the last generation of people who didn't grow up with social media, but we're also the first generation of parents that have had to navigate this much noise. So if I think about how asinine a 40-hour work week is, and we still ascribe to this, where we never get a break. So if you charge your phone by your bed, which I still do, and I try to break this cycle all the time, but I don't yet. We wake up in the morning before we even pee, looking at the responses from other people, just checking the email, trying to get ahead of the game, right? Which means our cortisol goes up, our shoulders are here. Then our babies come in, or our partner has questions, or our, you know, our parents, our aging parents are also navigating this process. But this is what happens when you have children later. And so there's all of these things happening in this moment. And then we go to work and we get our people, our clients, our customers, our family, our children, those little life suckers can get us any second of the day. We all have a phone. And then in case I miss it, I got this. So I could just get buzzed on my watch. And my body knows that. The body keeps the score. And so all the time, even when I've had to take my watch off and put my phone outside the room when I'm doing therapy, because it is so alluring to wonder what that might be. Is that a team snap notification? Is that my husband? Is it the kids? And like before, when the school called, like as a child, if I were to call home, somebody was fucking dead. Like there's something, like there's a limb missing. And now, like when my daughter, she just didn't get picked in gym yesterday, or I mean last week at like, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, and I get this phone call. I'm going on a stage. I'm like, oh, just a second. Sorry. And she's like, hiya. Hey, what's that? Mom, I'm feeling anxious. I said, oh, fuck, good. It's a feeling. I don't know if I'm going to get picked in gym. And then I'm like, okay. And then she's like, okay, I'm good. I got to go. And so the whole day I'm like, holy fuck, is she good? Why am I on the road? And we can wait for her to get after school. And she calls and I say, hey, Are you okay? She's like, yeah. I'm like, what do you mean? Yeah. Like the constant, there's no break. And I think about when my dad or my mom would come home from work at 5:30. I remember they would sit on the couch and watch MASH. My father would fall asleep. We'd have dinner. Nobody could get them. If they called the house phone, there would be like, we would just not answer during dinner. That was a rule. Nobody could get them. Can you imagine what happened to their systems? Can you imagine how much easier it would be to sleep? And the data is really fascinating around this, right? Like it is estimated that our great grandparents looked at their children 72% more of the time than we look at our babies. And this constant need, what we won't automate is relationship, right? Ram Dass talks about, we're just walking each other home. That's why we're here. And if we don't have the skill to practice this sense of like, okay, come here, what's happening? But we're constantly pulled in data by data.
I think we need to bring back the paid texting. Like, I think we need to pay per text. And so do you remember when we had, when that first happened, it was like, you could be interrupted, but it really had to be something. It was like, I'm picking you up at 7:30 or I will meet you here. It had to be everything because you were paying by the text, but we are in the world we are now.
Can I tell you this? I just thought about this the other day. I travel a lot and I know you do too. You know where my favorite place in the world is?
What's that?
On a plane.
Because you're disconnected? I buy the Wi-Fi. I'm sick.
See, I know. And
because
I try not
to. I catastrophize that something will have happened to my children while I am in there. And it will disrupt my brain so much so that I will, this is so disturbing, but this is the God honest truth of like what my brain has done. And when I remember when I first admitted this, I was like, everyone's going to think I'm the worst human ever, but I will catastrophize something happening to them to the full extent of, oh my God, what am I going to say at a funeral? Like, what am I going to say? How am I going to encapsulate their life? And I will just be sitting there bawling my eyes out on a plane because I have decided something has happened, and I will go all the way down. Somebody told me it's like a trauma practice, like your brain like practicing for trauma. So on planes, I get anxious as heck, and a lot of them don't have Wi-Fi anymore. So this is a very new discomfort for me where I feel like I can't get, like my children cannot get a hold of me, or what happens if this plane starts to go down and I cannot call them. It's
rough. And I grew up in a time where we did not have phones. I grew up at a time where we had to, I got in trouble in junior high because I was babysitting a kid and I called my boyfriend and the family looked at the call history and just so happened that my boyfriend at the time's mom worked with this woman, which I didn't know. And she was like, oh, hey, your call. And I wasn't allowed to date. So it was like, I remember it to this
there's
day.
There's a lot wrapped like, up there.
So, there was
baby
so,
girl.
There's yeah, but like that's how you. That's how I grew up. You like only had landlines. But I do think I'm going to be honest, and I would love to hear what you think too. I do feel like our kids have constant connection to each other, and for a while that felt really, really good because yeah. we were in such a disconnect in the world, and they had no other means to do so. But I also find them treating it all very differently. I feel like because we had the excited guinea pig of Facebook and MySpace and Instagram, we were so all in on it. And we still to this day haven't really regulated that. My kids don't spend time on social media like it's where their relationships are built. Do you know what I mean? Like they're still going to the mall. They're still hanging out with their friends. They're still going to the park and playing basketball. They're playing video games too. And they're on Snapchat. That's like how they all talk to each other. There is texting. And like sometimes I notice they do a lot of FaceTime. So like they do a lot of, with my one daughter, with her girlfriend, she'll be doing her makeup in the morning and her girlfriend's doing her makeup in the morning. And they just do it together on a FaceTime call. But they do have access to me all the time. And that's like, so here's me full-fledged. Oh, my job is online. My work is on, like everything about me is, and so that's my camera. That's my journal. That's my, how I read. It's how I consume content. It's how I listen to podcasts. It's how I navigate where I'm going. It's why my kids have access to me 24/7. I also share custody of them. So I can't do that cute little, let's lock the phone outside the room and down the corner because my kids aren't with me 3 days a week and I need to know that they're okay and safe. And so there's like, I feel like we, our generation especially, or like the millennial, the early adopters of the internet, ours seems so much more toxic than the kids. If that's my observation of, they just seem a little bit more, I don't know, realistic about it. Like it's a thing to scroll and observe, but they're not like obsessively on it, if that makes sense. They're just...
No, they grew up with it. So they have a script for it and we don't. Okay. So that's the difference. And then here's the other thing that I think is so critically important in this process is that the kids will be all right. They have the capacity to be amazing. What I worry about the most is us, because you can't tell kids how to be great. You have to show them. And when we are disconnected, when we are, as you say, inundated with this whole world of media and data that we don't know, our bodies are not prepared for, the noise is making us unable to sleep or connect or communicate. The biggest skill that we need to teach our children is how to regulate emotion, how to interact with other people, how to have friends over to play cards, to drink coffee, to do whatever we do. And I'm not worried about the kids. I'm worried about us. Because, you know, you can't tell somebody how to apologize. You have to show them. You can't tell somebody how to start a job interview. You have to show them. You can't tell somebody how to be anti-racist. You have to show them. And if we are very disconnected in that regard, if we're not, you know, this is what you do when you get into an elevator, you know, you wave at somebody, you have a conversation with somebody, you know, I think that our biggest focus, and we're going to be worried about the kids every generation that comes. Every generation is worried about the kids. I mean, if it's not the weed and then it's the rock and roll and then it's the Elvis and, you know, like we're just like, now it's the vaping or, you know, whatever. Kids are going to figure it out, but we are required to look after us. We need to be the priority in order to stay present with them. And I think this is a first generation where they know, and they know more about the tools of communication than we do. And so we're feeling very lost and wanting them to get back to the good old days, the way that we know things to be. And I will tell you, the biggest gift is leaning into what they know more about, even if you don't condone it or support it. And these are the three words, I think we talked about this before, that really get me all the time. Tell me more. Because when we want to fix it and like, mom, I just want to try vaping. Like, it's totally fine if I'm like doing this and like, I'm, you know, this happens and everybody's on Snapchat. I need Snapchat at 13 or 12 or 11 or 10 or 9 or whatever. Tell me more.
Yeah. Right? What am I missing? Peel the onion. Like what's there?
And Yeah. And I think there's so much about that, that we just want to fix this when our babies aren't okay, when the world feels too messy, we just want to come up with the answers and fix it. And I think what we're missing in all of this noise is just a little more practice in this place of just slowing it down, because that's where we have access to the good. We know what our kids need. We know how to be good partners. We know what our, even our controversial ex-partners need, you know, when that gets messy. We lose access to the good when we get dysregulated. When I'm regulated, man, I can walk you through anything, even the people that have crushed my soul to the most unimaginable degrees. I can have access to empathy, which does not mean I condone or support or have any love for you in any capacity. But I will tell you, when I can garner that, I win way more. And that's the only thing that matters at the end of the day, because if you're not okay, the people you love and you lead and you care for, they don't stand a chance. It's not about the kids. It's not about your even your employees or your staff or all those things, as much as it is about shifting the necessity to look after you. And we then get into this rhetoric around self-care. And I don't give a shit how much yoga or kale you drink. If you're not doing that in a regulated state, if you're not every once in a while on purpose dropping your shoulders, wiggling your toes, you know, when the toughest news comes or you're in this anticipatory anxiety waiting phase of whatever it is like in your world, if you spend that time on a plane wondering about all the things that can go wrong, you are missing all of the things that are going right. And doing this on purpose, like Sarah, when you're in that plane, even if something is happening to those babies, there's not a fucking thing you can do about it. And giving yourself that permission in that moment to be present in this place, that no matter what, these kids have everything they need in this moment. I'm doing the best I can with what I got. That gift of giving your body that break, and it'll take practice, because you know what we're better at? Catastrophizing the world.
Yeah, I'm so good. I'm basically an expert.
Well, you're welcome. And like, if you think you've thought of everything that could possibly happen to your children, like buckle up, bitch, because I'll trump that every day. Because we also come from this generation that says, don't relax because you're lazy and think about all the bad stuff, right? Like I am really fighting in this last little bit what it means to have a nap, what it means to rest. Like I go so hard during the week and travel and get to hockey practice and be that, like on the Saturday, I'm so shocked at like, if I can find, or it's a Tuesday that I'm home, that I can find an hour and a half to have a nap. It is so necessary, because you think about this, in one generation, we've never had this much noise, but it feels asinine that I would take a 60 and not be listening to a podcast or considering the next book or creating content or doing something that's going to impress the world because I can. But holy shit, I'm a better mom. I'm a better partner, I think, and I have more access to give the world. I'm more generous with the things that I think I can be when I'm boundaried. And boundaried means, where do I get my body back into that state of rest? Not did I get a workout in, not did I do this, not did I serve 60,000 people. Did I actually drop my shoulders today? Did I put some water in this? Did I wiggle my toes? Did I give myself, our parents, I think about this with my grandparents. I would come home during harvest or have a conversation with my grandfather, like, oh, look how much rain we got this week. Too wet. Look, this week it's been so great. There's been so much sun. Too dry. Everything would get in the bins and it would be a good year. And I'd be like, you know, this is great. Hey, Pop, somebody's going to die. Wait for it. You know, like we just think that if we plan, and I will tell you, any parent that's got that phone call in the middle of the night, you know, our worst, whatever, or heard the word that changes the course of our life, no amount of prepping for it gets you ready for it. But it robs you of all of the things that in this precious place of things going well or going right, you know, that we just miss it. And it takes some practice. We're not good at it, right? Because we really are ready for anything. And I just, those moments of, you know, sitting before you get up in the morning or sitting with your coffee, joy is the most vulnerable emotion on the planet. Did you know that?
Really?
People think it's shame or guilt or even fear.
I thought I would have guessed.
Sadness. It's joy.
Wow.
When is the last, when you're belly laughing with your babies, when you're dancing in your kitchen sober, when you're being ridiculous. Like, it's like, those are the best moments when you watch Lemmy's face when she like sees the princess. Oh my God. Can we even talk about her for one goddamn second?
She's like, just, I know.
Isn't it?
We were like, there's things like that. And I was like, looked at my husband, our eyes are welled with tears. And we just saw how much joy she had in just like being told to dance. And then without even conversing about each other, just to like tie into that being such a vulnerable thing, we that night had like this random dance party. And I looked at Shane and I was like, in what world are we the one? Because he literally taught her like the sprinkler. And I was like, we are the last two people on this planet that should be teaching her dance moves. But she was so happy. And it was just like, we saw how much joy she was getting out of such a simple thing. And I was like, and weirdly, we just like communicated telepathically and we're like, dance party in the living room. And I mean, with tears welled in, and we just look at each other like, oh my God, like this is, and it's sometimes I find it hard, and I'm sure a lot of parents don't get this opportunity, but you do at a certain point of parenthood, I think, where it's all so stressful and it's all so much. And then all of a sudden you're just like, this is the most beautiful thing at the same time. And you just start to be like, that you have to almost like take a step out of your own body and like look at this moment and be like, holy shit, this is it. Like, this is the beautiful joy of life. This is what it's all about. And it's not that we went there. It's not that we did this. Like with my son, one of my greatest memories and one of Shane's most embarrassing life moments was when him and I had a lightsaber battle with baguettes in the grocery store that we did buy, but I will never forget it because I thought to myself, I'm the silly mom. And I always wanted to be, sorry, it looks like we froze here. I always wanted to be the silly mom. And in that moment, I was a silly mom, and it was like such a prideful, beautiful moment, but I never would have thought that joy was the most vulnerable.
And she's everywhere. You just have to find her. Yes. So last night, you know, I had some girlfriends over, and I had the charcuterie board. I was like, oh, like, I want this. Nobody gives a shit. And I sunk into all four of them in a rare occasion that we could be there, that, you know, the baby's aligned, the partner's aligned, all those things. And I just... we spend a lot of time thinking, is the house good? Did we look good? And I sat across from them thinking, like, holy fuck, I don't even think my hair's in a bun. I'm not even sure I have a bra on. Here's a fucking mess of crackers that I had from, you know, in the cupboard. And I was like, in that moment, I was like, this is where you find her. She's ready at any turn. And like, one of my friends, Jess Jansen, wrote a book called Find the Joy, Bring the Joy, Find the Joy.
I love Jess.
She, I know you do. And so she buried her second baby. And she said, even in the front row of a funeral, there are moments of joy. And I love that, you know, because I think even in positions of privilege, people will say to me, well, it might be easy for you to find joy because you're right. I will tell you all day long that I started on third base, that I am white and straight and able-bodied and I have money and I better fucking use that. That is the purpose of this platform for me in so many ways. And I also never want you to underestimate your ability to find it in the run of any day. Mm. The run of, you know, giving somebody, I was in a drugstore in a little town in Alberta this week. I was speaking to a group of nurses and the talk was done and I wanted to, like, they had the cutest Easter decorations in Value Drug Mart in Wainwright, Alberta. So I went in there and there was this like tiny human who was like 13 years old, cutest thing. In the back of the store, she had her sunglasses on. Now these sunglasses were the size of dinner plates. Okay. Yep. And I was like, sister, look at you. And no need to have sunglasses on in the store, but she has her sunglasses on and working it. Okay. She's got her hair piece tucked in that she tried on clearly. And I said to her, I love those glasses. And you could see her mom was sort of like, mm-hmm. And she was like, thank you. And now for the rest of the time in that store, she followed me. Every time I went down an aisle, I was like, oh, hey. Oh. And when I left the store, she said to me, can I just talk to you for a second? I said, yes. I love your boots. I said, thank you so much. I've thought about this. I've told this story three times. I thought about that baby girl a number of times. The joy that it gave me to notice now that clearly She wanted somebody to notice. I mean, yeah. You do not have rose-colored dinner plates strapped on your face and you're hoping to be incognito, okay? So the ability to be able to engage in the kids in our community, the women who just so desperately want to know that they're doing something right, the men at the hockey rink, when I can say to some grandpa, can I just tell you something? I watched your baby in the penalty box today. He is so amazing. You like what happens in that moment for them is lovely. But what happens for me is really like, you're welcome. You know, like this is free. We have this capacity and it is the only thing that we need to get our regulation back on. It gives us the gift. And I think it's in that vulnerable place of joy that is truly where this vulnerability that we seek all the time lives, right?
I think back to a conversation we had on this platform a couple years ago. I bring this episode up a lot. It's Nicole Brienne, and she talked about when she was going through a divorce and how she talked about how grief is love with nowhere to go and how she started taking what she was giving into her marriage and that sort of love and just giving it randomly. And what I find fascinating about what you just said and what is so true is I think that so many of us are looking for joy in our own lives. We're looking to find it. Like, where is it? I need to buy this or I need to do that. And those might spark joy, sure. But it's what you're saying is like, it's this free moment and you're right. When you give joy, it is something that you receive and that is so free and it is everywhere. It is, if you're on social media and if you're on social media, it's there. You get to do it. If you are, and I will tell you as somebody who is on social media, sometimes I'll open a DM in the worst moments of my life and I'll just log on. And someone will say something so kind. And I'm like, do you even know what this can do for people? And you're so right. It is free. It is available to us. And it is joy. And that, like, I talked about this online, like it lives in the body just like all the other things can. Joy stays with you.
100%. And it releases neurochemicals that have a significant impact on your mental and physical health.
Yes.
And I think does this ever surprise you, you know, when you're just being you talking about your life and that somebody will come up to you either at a talk or something, or maybe in your DMs and just say to you like, Sarah, you changed my life or you saved my life, or do you know how much you matter? And I'm always taken aback by that,
yeah.
You know, when people say those things, because that obviously for me isn't the intention. And I think that's truly where vulnerability is when you make an impact, when you are just being so authentically you. And I think the more we have the bravery or the capacity to be authentic, you can't get there unless somebody shows you how to do it. You have to lead the way, which is really why I think women have much more of an emotional language than men. Okay, so it is estimated that there's this beautiful number that I was looking at today where it's like we are equipped with much more emotional language, not because we feel more emotions than men. Okay, so I have two sons and a daughter. This isn't about penises and vagina. It's about right now, because the world is so disconnected, what we need is people at the helm who can have emotional languages. Women are poorly underrepresented in leadership positions globally. We make 77 cents on every dollar, comparatively speaking, across this globe. The necessity to have an emotional language at the helm of family systems, of education boards, of justice systems, is that we need a place to sink into emotion, to find joy and vulnerability. And women historically are better at that because it's been considered soft skills. And the soft skills are the skills that will save the world.
That's so beautiful. I could talk to you for literally ever. I had a million other things that I would have loved to, but I think this is what's so important about your work is it's so never ending. There's so much to, you just have such a great view on the world and ourselves and the way that we can connect. And I think brings a lot of, there's one thing that I will never lose in this life. And that is hope. Hope for people, hope for the, like, if you lose hope for some of the worst people you've ever met, you lose hope for everyone. Like there is, I have such a, and I think maybe because we've all watched ourselves change. I'm not the same person I was 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. All of us are changing. And I think I love that you can watch yourself almost be your own hypocrite at times. Like, you evolve and you get to see it and you get to, I remember Glennon Doyle actually said something about being your own hypocrite and how you can say one thing and then 3 years later you grow and you contradict yourself. And that's such a cool, beautiful thing. But you have to hold that same hope for other people. You have to hold them with, I mean, all the hope in the world, no matter where they are, what status any of it is. And I love that you sort of lean into those conversations. You are obviously, actually not obviously, we haven't even talked about it this, you're an author and you're a podcast host, but where would you, if you want people to sort of like start to dive into all of this goodness that you sort of have just so generously put out into the world, where would you say is best for people to start tapping in? Because I remember the day I tapped in and I got to experience you in real life, which is such a privilege, but you have continued to make that impact. And I have so much gratitude towards you, and you're so loved. And I would just love for more people to be able to chime into that goodness. Cause I think you're not just one of those people that leads the way, but I do think that you're also one of those people that plants seeds of wisdom in people who will then go on and lead others. Like, I think that you're also one of those that was like placed in the world to, like, I don't know. I think there's going to be a trace back at some point of some person, and it's going to be something that came from you, just like somebody likely did that in your life. I see you as one of those people. And so when I talk about people like you, I think it's one of those things that can really change people's lives, but also change the world a little bit too. So long, big compliment to ask you, what's your social media handle? Just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love all of those words. Thank you so much. I would love your community to be a part of ours. I'm drjodycarrington.com is where everything is.
Amazing.
And the podcast and the courses and the social media, we spend lots of time on Instagram, just like you, but there's lots of resources there. I hope the effort is to create a safe place to land for everyone. And so I hope we're doing that.
Yeah. And congrats on the podcast. People are just,
still to this day,
I just got a message yesterday and someone was like, you know, I followed you for years. And then I listened to you on Dr. Jody and I understand it now. And I was like, whoa, I guess that was like, I'm vulnerable online, but on Dr. Jody's podcast, that was just a day. I remember it so well.
And
I was like, I was a disaster. And I was like, which is great. You know, it's funny. I always say to people, I'm the funniest and most vulnerable and at my best when I'm exhausted, whether it's emotionally, physically, mentally, like that's where it all comes out, because I have no means to, like, everyone will always be like, cause I don't drink, and they'll be like, have you taken an edible? I'm like, no, I'm just very tired and jet lagged. And it just makes me very funny and then very vulnerable. And I just do a lot. Okay. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, no, I literally got a message yesterday and I thought, we did that months ago. I think it came out a couple months ago now, but yeah, but just the way you lead conversations, that podcast is doing so well. And I will never, this is like such a cool thing that you and your team has created, but the cover photo being your childhood photo, man, does that, you can't listen to somebody's story and look at their childhood face and not just see their humanness. Like, there isn't that, there's a weird brain connection that happens, and it's so beautiful.
I know. Marty came up with that, and I was, oh, and it's
love Marty.
People won't send it.
Yeah.
Like, it takes us a long time to be like, they're like, I don't know. Look.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Because we all come from somewhere.
Well, thank you so much. And for everyone listening, I'm going to have all that information in the show notes for you. Thanks for being on this journey with us. We have so much work to do for ourselves in the world, whether it's working on our joy, our boundaries, our ability to see the good in everybody. I love so much of what's come from this episode. So please go check out Dr. Jody Carrington, and we'll see you next week.
Well, friends, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to today's episode. For more information on this episode, check out the show notes or find us on Instagram at The Papaya Podcast. And if you loved what you just listened to or know somebody who would, please share it. Simply screenshot today's episode in the podcast app and share it to your Instagram stories, and don't forget to tag us. Last but not least, if you'd like to lend your personal support to the podcast, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes. We would be oh so grateful. Tune in next week for a fresh new episode of The Papaya Podcast, and we'll see you then.